This morning's reading is from Philippians chapter 2, beginning at verse 19, and this can be found on page 1179 in the Church Bibles. Philippians 2, verse 19. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him as soon as I see how things go with me. And I am confident in the Lord that I myself will come soon. But I think it is necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. Welcome him in the Lord with great joy, and honour men like him, because he almost died for the work of Christ, risking his life to make up for the help you could not give me.
Well, do keep Philippians chapter 2 open on page 1180 as we look at it. And the issue which this section of Philippians raises for us is the costliness of serving Jesus Christ and the sacrifice that is involved in doing that. It's an important issue for us to consider because we live, don't we, in a convenience culture. Convenience stores open from late till 8, some 24 hours a day. Convenience foods mean we can have a meal ready in seconds in the microwave. Convenience shopping and e-commerce mean that we no longer need to go to the shops. And we don't even have to go to the bank. We can do all our banking online or over the phone. But what if something isn't convenient? We're so used to life being made easier and easier for us. What happens when we find that something is inconvenient? I guess the answer is that particular thing tends not to get done. We say we don't have the time. We're too busy. Well, if we're followers of Jesus Christ, that presents us with a dilemma. Just take the issue of Christian service, of serving Jesus. It is rarely convenient. It is often inconvenient. Just think about those who lead young people's groups on a Sunday morning. It means you miss the sermon. It means you have to spend time midweek preparing what you're going to teach. Or leading a small group midweek is often inconvenient. Again, spending the time preparing, getting to know the people in the group. It takes time. There's the responsibility of leading the group. Or our monthly church prayer gathering. Again, it may be inconvenient. Might be a hassle to come out. Much easier to sit at home and put our feet up. And putting ourselves out for others is inconvenient. Building friendships takes time and it takes effort. Serving Jesus Christ is inconvenient for many of us when we think of it in those terms. And the danger is that we'll only do it as long as it is convenient and it fits in to our routine. When it becomes too difficult, we stop. Well, that is Paul's fear as he writes to these Christians in Philippi. If you've been following our series over the last 4 weeks, you'll know that. They've begun well as followers of Jesus, but Paul, who first of all taught them about Jesus, is now in prison. They face persecution, and the danger is that they will simply keep a low profile as followers of Jesus and stop contending as Christians and serving him. I think we see that in chapter 1, verse 27, just back a page, which really serves as the key verse so far in the letter. Chapter 1, verse 27. Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. And we've seen the two things over the last couple of weeks which will stop them doing that. The first has been opposition. Just see how Paul carries on in verse 27. Then whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, I will know that you stand firm in one spirit, contending as one man for the faith of the gospel, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. And so, down in verse 29, Paul has to remind them that suffering is part and parcel of following Jesus. So opposition is one thing that could cause them to keep a low profile. But the other thing which we've seen is internal division and selfishness. So just glance down to chapter 2, verse 3, where Paul has to say to them, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. And in chapter 2, verses 5 to 11, he pleads with them to have the mindset of Jesus Christ, at showing the same humility as him. You see, Paul knows that it is a costly business serving Jesus Christ and contending for the gospel. And indeed, there may even be some here as we meet who are feeling that acutely at the moment. If we're not feeling it acutely at the moment, then we will feel it at some stage. But this contending is what Paul expects of every Christian believer. And so in the passage we're looking at, chapter 2, verses 19 to 30, he holds up two examples of people who were contending for the gospel, who, in the words of chapter 2, verse 5, demonstrate the attitude of Jesus Christ. And as we look at them this morning, we're going to find that each one forces us to ask a question of ourselves. They're important verses, important if we are followers of Jesus, to see if we're living authentic Christian lives, and important too if we're simply investigating, if we're not yet followers of Jesus, so that we can understand what the Christian life is like, what it would mean for us if we did decide to follow Jesus and put our trust in him. So first of all, let's look at Timothy in verses 19 to 24. And Timothy forces us to ask this question: are we willing to serve? Are we willing to serve like Timothy? Have a look at verse 19. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. Paul is planning to send Timothy back to Philippi to find out how things are going and to encourage them to keep contending in serving Jesus. Well, how is he described? Verse 20, I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. Now, the point in those two verses is that Timothy demonstrates the mind of Jesus Christ in his service. In verse 20, that little phrase, like him, is exactly the same word that's already been used in chapter 2, verse 2, of Jesus. Just have a look at chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 with me. If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with his spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded. It's exactly the same word that's echoed in chapter 2, verse 20, of Timothy, demonstrating the mind of Christ. And do you see how the same point is made in verse 21 by implication? That unlike everyone else, Timothy looks out for the interests of Jesus Christ. Now, there's nothing wrong with looking after our own interests. Indeed, Paul assumes we will. In chapter 2, verse 4, he says, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. But what marks out Timothy, do you see, is that he doesn't simply look after his own interests, but the interests of Jesus Christ as well. He doesn't let his own interests get in the way of serving Jesus. Well, I guess that begs a question, doesn't it? What's it look like in practice to be looking out for the interests of Jesus? Well, Paul's going to make it clear that it's not sort of something which is so super spiritual or academic or abstract that it cannot be measured in concrete terms. Now, he goes on to show us the two ways in which serving Christ in this way can be seen. First of all, verse 20, looking out for the interests of Jesus means serving other Christians, taking a genuine interest in their welfare. So not just a quick hello, quick how are you, fine, thank you, very well, and then passing on. Not just that sort of veneer of politeness which goes no further. Now, Timothy is not like that. Do you see verse 20? He takes a genuine interest in their welfare, a painstaking, natural interest in the lives of others, totally selfless. Looking out for the interest of Jesus means, verse 20, taking a genuine interest in the welfare of others. Now, Paul is not saying that we should all become like Dot on EastEnders. You know how it is? It's a forever prying into people's lives just for the sake of gossip. But I don't see many Dots and Curlers sitting here in front of me this morning. I guess for most of us, our danger is probably the sort of drinks party syndrome. You know what it's like when you go to a drinks party? You meet lots of people, don't you? Perhaps 20 or 30 people you speak to in the course of the evening. But actually, most of the time, the conversations are fairly superficial and shallow, just talking about holidays or whatever it is. Now, clearly, in a church the size of St. Helens, we cannot take a genuine interest in everyone. But we can, can't we, take a genuine interest in those in our particular area, perhaps those in our small group. Might be worth discussing it next time our small group meets. Are we a small group, verse 20, which takes a genuine interest in the welfare of each other? So Timothy, like Jesus Christ, serves others, verse 20. But Timothy is also like Jesus Christ, verse 22, in terms of his proven character and his commitment to the gospel. Just have a look with me at verse 22. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. Here is a tried and tested worker who has served alongside Paul. That word served literally means slaved. He slaved for the work of the gospel. And the same word has already been used of Jesus Christ himself, chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, who being in very nature God, chapter 2, verse 6, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. And now the same word is used to describe Timothy, demonstrating the attitude of Christ by being prepared to be a slave, which of course is why he's prepared to play second fiddle to Paul and to serve him. It's interesting that, isn't it? He's quite willing, you see, to be faceless himself and nameless himself in the service of Christ. It's a great mark of maturity. See, the mature Christian is not someone who expresses their opinions forcefully up to others and then expects them to get on with the work. No, Christian maturity is seen in this desire to serve alongside, to play second fiddle, serving the gospel and doing so willingly. Not to be a somebody, but to be a slave. So can we see Timothy is willing to serve, looking out for the interests of Jesus by serving other Christians and by serving the gospel? Now, I guess the question we need to ask is, why does Paul need to write this to the church in Philippi? It's always a good question to ask as we study the Bible, not just what does it say, but why is it written? Well, these verses, although in first reading they look like travel details, Paul simply letting the Philippians know who is going to arrive where and when, they are far from that. We went to see some friends in Hull just before Christmas. They sent us their travel instructions. Go up the M1, turn right, and stop just before you get to Denmark. Well, on first reading, that's the sort of thing, isn't it, which these verses sound like. But actually, Paul's fear, you see, is that opposition and self-interest will stop the Christians in Philippi serving Jesus in this way. Well, I wonder how our attitude to Christian service measures up. Do we just serve Jesus when it's convenient, when we've got the time? I don't know about you, but it seems to me this is very countercultural, isn't it? Being a slave, serving others, where our whole culture is saying, look after yourself, look out for your own interests, fulfill your potential. I met up with a friend a few months ago who I haven't seen for some time. He works in the city, and he told me how he had just changed jobs within his company, and he had made his decision so that he could serve Jesus more effectively, even though he knew it wasn't the best career move. But it did mean that he could serve Jesus more effectively. Now, I hope we can see that the issue here is not that those who Paul addresses have ceased to be followers of Jesus, but it is that they have lost their selfless edge. Their own interests stop them serving Jesus' interests. Now, I find that very challenging, because isn't that our danger much of the time? You see, I doubt the danger for many of us is that we'll become atheists. But within 24 hours, we can lose our selfless edge. We can lose our desire to serve and start coasting as Jesus' followers, being comfortable, looking out for our own interests. And when it comes to serving Jesus, saying, this far, but no further. Or when we think of our children, are we willing for our children, when they grow up, to serve Jesus in this way, even at the expense perhaps of a good job or a good lifestyle? That is the first question which these verses raise. Are we prepared to serve like Timothy? Let's move on to consider our second question. Are we prepared to suffer like Epaphroditus? Are we prepared to suffer like Epaphroditus? Verses 25 to 30. Now, the name Epaphroditus literally means charming. Whether he was or not, we don't know. But what we do know is that he was sent by the church in Philippi to help Paul. You see that in verse 25. He was sent to take care of Paul's needs. And in chapter 4, verse 18, we're told that he brought money from the church in Philippi for Paul. But now we find that Paul is having to send him back, and Paul is anxious to show the church in Philippi that Epaphroditus has not been a failure. It's easy to think that, isn't it, when a missionary returns home early? But just have a look at verse 25. But I think it's necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. How is he described? A brother, a fellow worker, and fellow soldier. Here is a man, you see, who has been fighting side by side with Paul in serving Jesus. He hasn't shied away from conflict and opposition. He's not returning home from the mission field early because he can't cope with the fight. No, he's returning home early because he's ill. And clearly, again, you see, when we ask the question, well, why? Why is Paul writing this to this particular church? It is because he's holding Epaphroditus up as a model of what it means to contend for the gospel, even to the point of suffering. He was a fellow soldier serving Paul, not being ashamed, willing to suffer, the implication for the Christians at Philippi being that they too should be like that. And we see why he's being sent back in verse 26. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. He's homesick. He's been ill. The Philippians heard about it. They were worried. And now Epaphroditus is worried because they were worried. Verse 27, indeed he was ill and almost died, but God had mercy on him. And not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Once again, there's a deliberate echo here with Epaphroditus of Jesus Christ. So in chapter 2, verse 8, just back over the page, we're told of Jesus in chapter 2, verse 8, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, literally unto death. And exactly the same phrase is used of Epaphroditus in verse 27. Indeed, he was ill almost unto death. So now it's time for Paul to send Epaphroditus home. Verses 28 and 29. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad and I may have less anxiety. Welcome him in the Lord with great joy and honour men like him. Paul is often stereotyped, isn't he, as an uncaring bigot. Perhaps we've come across people who read things that he wrote and they don't like it, and they give him a bad press. They stereotype him. I guess within all of us there is that certain tendency to stereotype others. I came across an article in a newspaper recently entitled The A to Z of the British Male, which was full of stereotypes of British men. A is for accents. The British male considers it unmanly to adopt an accent when speaking a foreign language. B is for barbecues. He loves to cook outside, but only if the weather is at its most unpleasant. B is also for burping. R is for roads and routes. The British male spends up to 40% of every day recommending the best route to his colleagues. Well, I'm sure those stereotypes don't describe any of us. But you see, that stereotype of Paul as a bigot, well, it's totally smashed, isn't it, in these verses. He comes across as he really is, as a caring pastor. And why had Epaphroditus become ill? Well, verse 30, he almost died for the work of Christ, risking his life to make up for the help you could not give me. That word risking means gambling. He gambled his life for the sake of serving Jesus. He was willing to be identified with Paul, a prisoner, possibly himself to risk being imprisoned. Do you see how he lives far closer to the edge, doesn't he, than the comfortable pew fillers Paul is writing to in Philippi? He is prepared to suffer for the gospel. Just imagine two high-powered doctors. They're working in London, and they need to decide where they're going to live. They're planning to have children. I guess we might expect them to live in a fairly smart part of London, thinking of where the good schools are and where there's good healthcare and that kind of thing. Well, that happened to some friends of mine. They decided to live in the East End. Why? Well, because they wanted to support a local church there. They figured that their combined salaries would be of great benefit to that church, and that their gifts would be of a disproportionately high use in a poor East End church than in a church in the suburbs. It was a costly decision for them, costly too for their children when issues of education and health came along. But then we look at Epaphroditus, and he was prepared to give his life. Which forces us all, doesn't it, to ask the question, what are we prepared not to give up in terms of serving Jesus? Our busy schedule, our hobbies, sport, watching telly perhaps. What is it that stops us at standing firm as a follower of Jesus in the workplace, both in the way we act and in what we say as we try and communicate what Jesus has done for us? Perhaps a fear of what others think. Perhaps a fear of losing our job or not getting that promotion. Perhaps a fear of suffering. Well, Epaphroditus almost lost his life. Or what is it that stops us going abroad as missionaries? Especially now that so many countries want people who are qualified in various professions. They won't take people who have the label missionary, but they will take those with professional qualifications. We could even visit a St. Helens missionary in the summer holiday. It'd be much more interesting than taking a villa in the sun, wouldn't it? Do you see these two questions then, which Timothy and Epaphroditus force us to ask? Are we willing to serve Are we willing to suffer? Both of them modelled themselves on Jesus Christ. Now, it's important for us to see that the reason Paul spends time on these two is not because they are sort of Christian superheroes. No, his point is that this is the normal Christian life. Just follow through chapter 2 with me. You see, we've seen, haven't we, in chapter 2, verses 5 to 11, Jesus Christ humbly giving himself up, even to death on a cross. We've seen, too, in chapter 2, verse 17, the Apostle Paul speaks of himself being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith. And now Timothy, and now Epaphroditus. You see, this is the normal Christian life, serving and suffering. Which begs the question, where do we get the resources to live like that? Well, just look at chapter 2, verses 12 and 13, which we looked at last week. And we reminded, weren't we, that God never tells us to do something without giving us the resources to live like it. So chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For, and here comes the reason, it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. God is the one who provides the means and the resources, both the will, the desire, and the ability to live like Timothy and Epaphroditus. See, we may live 2,000 years later, but God hasn't changed, and what was true of them can be just as true of us. Well, there may be someone here this morning who is not yet a follower of Jesus Christ. Perhaps you know in your own mind that actually the reason is because it's never really been convenient. Life's been busy at work, lots of things to do at home. You know that Jesus Christ was God in the flesh. You know he died on the cross for you so that you can be forgiven and certain of heaven. You know that without him you will go to hell. But you've just never got round to doing anything about it. Perhaps waiting for the time when it will be convenient to begin the Christian life and start to follow him. Well, let me say, there will never be a time when it's convenient. So don't delay in beginning to follow him in the hope that there will be. No, the time to start following him is now. So if that's you, why not talk to a Christian friend afterwards about how you might go about doing that? And if we are followers of Jesus, then the same principle surely applies. We're not to wait for it to be convenient before we start serving Jesus Christ in a way that is sacrificial. All Christian service is costly. All Christian service is sacrificial. I suspect that an earlier generation of Christians would have known that. But of course, we living in our convenience culture need to be reminded time and again. In our culture, which is so focused on pleasure-seeking and self-serving. So here is a timely reminder. All Christian service is sacrificial. And the fact that on some days we're acutely aware of it more than others is no reason to stop serving. Are we willing to serve like Timothy? Are we willing to suffer like Epaphroditus? Let's pray together.